scores! Gilmore scores! With 1:03 left!
Off the glass, in left corner to Aguilla. Aguilla to the left circle. Passing to Yell, a shot. Save made by Al Aguilla. Rebound, another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson.
All right, let's get things going on this Thursday, April 18th, 2024. Welcome to the Scotiabank Saddledome, and welcome to this hour of Flames Talk. It's Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson, wherever you get your podcasts, Apple, Spotify, Amazon, and more. And here we are, Wes. It is game 82 of 82 at the Scotiabank Saddledome. Welcome to season finale Thursday, and welcome to the final regular season game, and in Calgary's case this year, the final game of the season. It's bonkers that we're here, hey? Like, we've known that this is coming, and yet it still feels a little surreal that this is exactly where we are on this Thursday.
Yeah, it's always weird today, and you're right, like, we've known it was coming. I think in some ways, you know, when a team starts playing out the string, you can kind of look forward to the end of it, and then yet it pops up, and it's like, whoa, geez, how did we get here so fast? So today's always a weird one for me.
The Flames will host the San Jose Sharks on Thursday night in the regular season finale, and then we'll go right from there to locker cleanout day on Friday, where the Flames will roll out all of their players. They'll go in for their medicals, their season-ending medicals. They'll have their exit interviews, and then they'll have the joy of talking to us for 10 or 15 minutes after that. And so thought we'd kick off this hour by looking ahead to locker cleanout on Friday. And what we're going to hear from players, what we're going to hear from coaches, and what we're going to hear from management, because we are expecting to hear from all three of those factions on Friday. We'll see, all time permitting. Obviously, coach and management can wait if things get bogged down a little bit. But want to get the text line involved to kick off this hour on Flames Talk as well on 960-960, because I'm curious what questions you have on locker cleanout day. What are the questions that you are going to be asking, or the questions that you really want answers to? Were if you were in exit interviews, if you were Craig Conroy and Don Maloney and Ryan Huska, and you were a part of those exit interviews, what questions would you be asking? What players would you have specific questions for? So get those in at 960-960, and we'll go through that as our Thursday program rolls along. We obviously have some ones that are front of mind for us that you know, will be rolling into Friday at the Dome here with definitely on our minds.
Yeah.
There's a few obvious ones for sure as we come into locker cleanout day on Friday.
Yeah, and I'm not sure if you feel the same way I do, but I think there's one that is so far above and beyond for the, like, just the significance of it is so much far beyond any of the others for me, and that is, how does Jacob Markstrom feel about his future in Calgary? And
that's the number one for you?
I think it is.
It is for me.
Well,
it's,
I shouldn't
so
say
obviously
I think it is.
The
it has to be. I don't know that we're I don't know how much of an answer we're going to get as media. We know how close Jacob plays his cards, or how close he holds his cards to his vest, as the old saying goes. And so I don't know how much he's going to let on, but I think that also, if you had Craig Conroy sitting here, I think he'd probably tell you that's the biggest question that he needs the answer to tomorrow as well.
Yep. I think that there is... There's a lot of those kind of similar questions that I think will be asked to some of the veterans on this team, and some of those similar questions asked to guys about how they fit in with the future. But because Jacob's name was so prominent leading up to the trade deadline, and because there was so much uncertainty as to whether or not he was going to get dealt or not, and there was so much buzz about that, I think that has to be the number one thing internally the Flames need an answer on. And I think externally it's going going to be the biggest talking point. Whether we get an answer on Friday or we don't get an answer until June, I think it's going to be the number one thing that Flames fans are talking about.
Yeah, and what really probably ratcheted it up to me was the comment that Jacob made on the eve of Mika Kiprusoff's jersey retirement about how he thought his situation, the way it played out publicly, is he getting traded to New Jersey, is he not? When he made the comment on that Friday after a morning practice that I think the whole situation could have been handled differently from up top, that got all our antennas up, didn't it? That was the first real public hint of dissatisfaction from Jacob in terms of how everything had played out or how everything had unfolded. And I think we've all been wondering in the 2 months since whether that has sort of tamped down any, whether that has dissipated, whether the frustration was aimed at the fact it became so public, whether the frustration was aimed at the fact that a trade didn't get done, whatever. I think we're wondering if that frustration has sort of gone away, or if Jacob Markstrom, who will be the backup tonight against the San Jose Sharks,
yep,
prefers to be wearing another jersey next year.
And then the other part of that, there's kind of facets or breakouts to that. It's like, okay, how cooperative are you willing to be,
right,
in trying to move out of here? You know, I think it was Kevin on the text line a couple of days ago. Yeah, it was Kevin on the text line on Tuesday when we were talking about Jacob very likely and now confirmed getting his final start of the season and maybe his final start as a member of the Flames. And he said, well, what about Utah? Utah is going to be spending a whole lot more and they want to be good here going forward. Would they be a team that would be all over acquiring a guy like Jacob? And, you know, I think there's question marks as to, you know, would the Coyotes or whatever they're going to be called next year, would Utah be in a spot where they're more competitive than Calgary next year? Are they ready to compete next year? Would a
right
team like that be something that Jacob would be willing to waive to go to? Is it only New Jersey and
right
one or two other? Like, you know what I'm saying? How cooperative is he willing to be?
There's been some speculation, too, around the Ottawa Senators. And I know they have Jonas Korpisalo signed relatively long term, but you know, there's been some question about, well, could there be a fit there for Jacob Markstrom as they look to finally turn a corner that they thought they'd have turned this season? And so you're right, like, is this just the New Jersey Devils or maybe the team du jour that looks like it could be contender if they had better goaltending, right? We've said this earlier in the week, we'll be saying it over and over. We could throw another name on that pile in 2 weeks when the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs is wrapped, because there will be a team that probably lost out in round one because they didn't get good enough goaltending.
Yep.
Right? Go look at the numbers that the Colorado Avalanche have got from Alexander Georgiev in the past couple of weeks. Like, if that continues, who knows what team sort of pops up and says, geez, we just didn't get good enough goaltending. But the question has to start, and I know there's one text that has come in that has said everyone knows he's gone. I don't believe that to be the case. I don't think this is totally cut and dry.
It's why like anybody who has said hey, you know, that Jacob was definitely going to be starting this final game of the season because it's his final. He's got to say goodbye to Flames fans. No, the Flames aren't going forward as if it's
right
a given that Jacob Markstrom isn't here next year. They're not going forward as if that is just set in stone, right?
Yeah, and that's why I wonder, and I kind of started the conversation this way. Like, I don't think you and I, buddy, are going to be sitting here at 4:12 on Friday talking about having a definitive answer publicly on the Jacob Markstrom front. I don't expect Jacob to be totally forthcoming either way, just because he's a guy who likes to keep these things private. You know, you can't get him to talk about much other than an upcoming game, and I don't expect tomorrow to be totally different, even as we do kind of the annual season in review questions. And so I think we're going to be sitting here sort of spitballing about what might have happened in that meeting with Craig Connor. And I'll just add to that really quick. It certainly behooves the Flames to keep this private themselves. If it's known that Jacob Markstrom has asked for a trade, if it's known that here's a few places he'd be willing to go, you really lose leverage in trade discussions. And so if Craig Conroy and company could keep a lid on this one, it would certainly be in the best interest of the organization.
Text line has plenty of ideas. Let's dive in at 960-960 as it's Pat and Wes along with you this hour on Flames Talk as we get set and start moving towards locker cleanout day on Friday. One more game to go. It's the Flames and Sharks on Thursday night. So I'll just read you starting right from the bottom. And you know, you can kind of interpret this all kinds of different ways. Answers that you want as a fan, questions that you would be asking if you were in management or coaching, questions you'd be asking if you're a player, just questions that you have or things that you want to address come locker cleanout day on Friday. Let's dive in at 960-960. This says, I'd be asking, were you happy that they chose Michael Backlund as the captain? I think the organization looks at that as one of the slam dunk decisions of the season. And I know that year one of Michael as the captain has not been a banner year for the organization, but that was such an obvious choice. I remember sitting right here, it would have been like 8 months ago, with you right there, me right there, and sitting right there in that seat was Nikita Zadorov, who was still a member of the Flames in September. And just before training camp, we were talking about a captain, and he said, yeah, it would be huge to have a captain, and it's obvious. It's Michael Backlund. We all want Michael Backlund to be the captain. And then you, Rasmus Anderson and Mackenzie Weegar and Blake Coleman and everybody, Jonathan Huberdeau, anybody in that room throughout training camp before the decision was made, it was all about Michael Backlund as the captain. So
right.
that was the easiest decision they had to make this year, I think.
Yeah, I remember writing about that. You know, one of the storylines kind of going into training camp was, you know, here are the three or four, however many captain candidates. And yet the race sort of fell apart when each one of those candidates said, well, yeah, it should be Michael Backlund. Hey, Rasmus Anderson, like, would you like to be the next captain?
Yes.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah,
well, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it'd be a great honor, but we all know the captain is Bax. And so I think if you're asking, in the exit interviews specifically with the players, and I'll add head coach Ryan Huska on top of that, I don't think there's any, I really just can't imagine you're going to hear from anyone that Michael Backlund wasn't the right choice to be captain. And more often than not, I do not feel like leadership has been an issue for this team. There's been a few games, certainly, and unfortunately against some weaker competition where they have not looked good, but we're talking about a team that continues to play hard, continues to battle hard, despite now being 15 or 17 or 19 points or whatever it is out of the playoffs, knowing that their fate's long been sealed. And, you know, in terms of public indications of leadership and in terms of the conversations you and I and others have privately with the players, I don't see that being on the Flames' list of issues.
Davis from Calgary says, I'd ask Jacob Markstrom if he's regretting choosing Calgary over Edmonton when he signed. Well, it's funny. I mean, a big reason why Jacob signed here, it's funny, is as we go back to the part that kicked off this conversation, a big part of why Jacob signed here was his close friendship with Elias Lindholm, who is now in his old spot in Vancouver. But, you know, they weren't going to, and the Flames gave him the no move clause, which was something Vancouver was not willing to do, understandably so. You look back and understand where Vancouver's situation was going into an expansion draft and only being able to protect one goalie.
Right.
And also, if a no move clause is there, they would have had to protect Jacob and expose Demko. Like, Vancouver,
so we
understandably,
know who would be starting right now in Seattle.
Right, exactly. Like, Demko would have been an obvious choice for him.
Yeah.
They wanted to re-sign him. They wanted to bring him back. And I think Jacob would have stayed had he gotten the no-move clause, but there was not a no-move clause in the cards if you're the Vancouver Canucks, understandably so. So Calgary and Edmonton were two of the finalists when it came to him signing here. I think he probably would have enjoyed his 3.5 years as a member of 3.5 years on the same team, rather, as Elias Lindholm, and they had some pretty good success a couple years ago. But yeah, the Oilers are in a different spot now than the Flames are. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm sure the Oilers wish that Jacob Markstrom made the decision to sign there as well. But you know, the one thing I know in all my discussions with pro athletes over the years, you don't find a lot who look back as far as three and a half years ago and spend too much time ruining those decisions. I think Jacob Markstrom is laser focused on the future. I'm just curious where that happens to be.
Shub says, curious to know how many of them are going to watch the playoffs. I honestly don't know. I think there are some that'll skip the first round and some that'll be all over it.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. It's always a mixed bag. I'll tell you this. It's a mixed bag in terms of who watches a lot of hockey during the season, too. You know, you've got a bunch of guys who on an off night will be watching a game. You have a bunch of guys who kind of always know everything that's going on around the league. And then you've got a bunch who don't.
Yeah.
You know, you've got some guys who, when they leave the rink, it's the end of their workday and they don't want to watch hockey every single night. And as someone who spends a bunch of time at the rink, I certainly have nights like that myself. And so I think a part of who's watching the playoffs too, you know, another part of that discussion, and this is always an exit day staple, is who might be going to world championships.
Yep.
Because I think there's a chance you're going to have a handful, potentially more than a handful, of Flames in Prague representing their countries as opposed to being at home watching the playoffs.
This says, I'd ask if Huberdeau would be willing to be traded. The problem with that is I'm sure that he'd be open to it. I honestly would. I think that he would be very open to a change of scenery, but how do you even make that happen with 7 years and, you know, $70.35 million or whatever is left on his deal? I'm not good at math, but however much is left on his deal, how does that even happen?
Yeah.
$73.5 million probably left on that deal.
Yeah, that's pretty good math.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just don't know how you could even make that happen at this stage of the game, to be perfectly honest.
I mean, I hate even mentioning this because I certainly don't want to be presenting this as a rumor or something that I think could happen. But, you know, we always hear about the Huberdeau, Gaudreau, you know, swap a couple guys with similar contracts. That's maybe the only way it happens, but I still don't see it.
This one reads from Dylan in Revelstoke. I'd ask Kadri and Markstrom about their futures. Wouldn't expect an answer. Do you guys expect to hear from Maloney? I don't expect to hear from Don Maloney. Craig Conroy is the guy who's in charge of, you know, who's got the keys to hockey ops, so he'll be the guy addressing that. As for Kadri and Markstrom, yeah, they're two of the names that are beyond a shadow of a doubt the most interesting when it comes to what this looks like. And honestly, I don't expect like a full-on clear answer as to what they want, because they both know that they've got years left on their contracts, right? And so that plays into what we're going to hear from these guys.
We've talked plenty, buddy, about Markstrom, obviously, and it will remain a talking point, but what's your gut on Kadri?
It's funny because when Eric asked him right after the trade deadline, Eric Francis on the road asked him about that, and he kind of didn't kind of hedged and didn't really give an answer. Said, yeah, you know what? I'm focused on hockey right now. Didn't give the full answer.
Right.
Or didn't give much of an answer And understandably so. That's not a criticism, but definitely didn't come out and say, for instance, what Mackenzie Weegar told him was more just of the, we'll see, play hockey, finish out the season, that type of stuff. So the fact that we didn't get the, I'm here, I got 5 years left on my deal, I'm here to be part of the solution, makes me interested to hear what we're going to, actually makes me interested to see, rather, what we're going to hear from Nazem on Friday.
Yeah, me as well. And I don't think, again, we're not getting a super straightforward answer, and that's not me accusing Nazem Kadri of stick handling around the question. It's just even a player who maybe doesn't want to be a part of a retool, and especially two players with the sort of savvy that Markstrom and Kadri have, they know that if they're not moved, they still have to go in that locker room in the fall. And so
exactly.
You're going to see both guys certainly make sure that they're not making any public waves. At least I believe that. And then, it's funny, I was talking to my colleague Danny Austin, and we were sort of throwing around some of the names. Oh, it'd be interesting to hear what so-and-so says. And, I raised the point, and it feels like ancient history. It's a year ago now. Wasn't Michael Backlund the last person you would have expected to sort of publicly waffle on his future in Calgary?
Yep.
And that became the biggest storyline of exit day last year.
Yep.
Because it was Michael Backlund sort of admission that he needed to do some more thinking about whether he'd be willing to extend, that he wasn't too sure that this team was on a path that would help him win. And obviously now, looking back on that, we know that he extended. We know that he's no closer to playing for a contender than he was at that point a year ago. But you sometimes get those unexpected curveballs on exit day two. I did not think Michael Backlund, like Elias Lindholm's answer last year, maybe didn't surprise me that much. But I did not see the Backlund one coming, and maybe we get another scenario like that tomorrow too.
Got a few minutes, so let's try to get to as many of these as we can. Harold in Diamond Valley says, for Craig, what's the draft plan and the ultimate goal for the organization for the end of next season? I think draft plan is to go out and get a couple of really important players in the first round, and then hit on some of the other picks they've got. They've got a lot of picks in the next few drafts, and I think the draft plan is finding some of those foundational players they need to get this team back to where they want to be and back to being able to be a contender. You need those foundational players, of which, maybe in Dustin Wolf they've got one, and they've got some other really nice potential pieces in Zeri or Brustevich or Pospisil, but they don't have that elite number one center. They don't have that elite number one D, and they need to find that in the next 3 years here.
Yeah, absolutely. And those are discussions that take place maybe less so tomorrow and further into the amateur scouting meetings. When you talk about their draft strategy, a big part of that is like, okay, are we taking the best player available? Do we really need a blue chip defenseman in a draft that's supposed to be heavy on them? Do we need a center? Do we need an Aginla? Whatever sort of conversations you're having at that point, it's probably less so an exit date question, but certainly something that's been bandied around behind the scenes for months and months already.
This says from Jeff, the two questions that pop to mind for me are, does Markstrom want to chase a cup somewhere else? And is Kadri committed to being a key veteran during this retool? Awesome coverage all year to the entire 960 team. Jeff, thanks for listening to Flames Talk. He says it's his go-to. So thank you, Jeff. Appreciate that. This says, the more the media bugs Markey about being traded probably pushes him towards asking for a trade. I hope he rips a strip off the guy who asks him Friday. That's a strange text. Isaac says, I think many of the younger defensemen...
Hang on. So we're just not going to ask him whether he wants to be in Calgary? Is that the plan?
Well, not according to this guy, he's going to rip a strip off you.
Okay. I'll have a strip ready.
I think many of the younger defensemen want to know what their role is going to be next year. Flames have a large amount of players at that position, and Siloviev, Miramanov, Hanley, Poirier, etc. are curious what ice time they're going to get. That comes from Isaac. This says...
Can I jump in on that one really quick? You know, I think players see the flip side of that a little bit more, and that's not the sheer number of players, but the fact that there's... You know, there's not a ton of guys blocking the opportunity there. I actually think for some of the players in the mix, while there's a large quantity of defensemen, the fact that you don't have a ton of guys who have proven to be quality NHLers, I think that's part of the appeal right now.
Ian in Cranbrook says, my questions for Sharon Govich and Kuzmenko, if they're willing to sign long-term and if Conroy will extend two snipers that can work with Huberdeau, quicker turnaround if Wolf advances quickly. Sharon Govich, I think there is plenty of reason to extend. I'm not ready to do it with Kuzmenko yet. That's one where I'm still a little... I want to see next season for Kuzmenko. This late season run has been fun, but not telling enough for me in terms of what he actually could be long term. I am not willing to personally go the extension route as of now.
Yeah, and I
especially think, because you also have a potential trade chip in him at next year's deadline.
Yeah, that's a big part for me. I also think Andrei Kuzmenko is leaving the Saddle Dome tomorrow with some probably pretty strict guidelines in terms of where they need him to be at physically going into next season. I do think that that's a guy who they'd like to see treat his summer a little bit differently than maybe he has or learned to in the past. And so, you know, I think you want to see that commitment in how he comes back for training camp as well before you're talking about even sort of a midterm extension.
Dustin in Drumheller says, I'd be asking right away which veteran wants to stay. If any hesitation, gone. If you can, try that again. If any hesitation, gone, if you can. Huberdeau's the only untradeable, not because of play, but because of contract. And if you can miraculously get rid of him, you'd do it for absolutely nothing. This from Dustin in Calgary, who says, on the flip side of all that, about Backlund, I'd be asking him if he's happy with his decision to stay and lead this team, which is a really interesting other side of it. Backlund extended for two more years and was very excited to be the captain and felt like this could be a team that could take a step this year and be better than they were last year. They did take a step. It was a step the other direction. I am curious. You know, that is one of the really interesting questions, kind of secondary questions I have, is what? Where's Michael Backlund's head at after deciding to stay and be the captain? That's one of the more interesting things I'm going to be looking to hear come Friday myself.
Refresh my memory, because it feels like forever ago that it was signed at the end of September. Was that a 2 or a 3 year extension?
2 year extension.
Right.
3 years overall, because he has 1 year left on this deal.
Yeah. Okay.
So 2 year extension.
No, it's a perfectly fair question. I mean, any guy who hasn't won, and I shouldn't even just say guy who hasn't won, you know, it's not like Nazem Kadri, now that he's won once, doesn't want to win another one. So I think any guy on the north side of 30, it's fair to wonder. Absolutely. And it's probably not just north of 30. Any, quite frankly, established NHLer. You know, Rasmus Anderson's a guy I wonder about. He's a guy that you're going to need to extend sooner than later. He's a guy that, for me, would be a massive part of your retool. He, for me, is a foundational type building block for this team. But, you know, I wonder where his head's at as well. And you know, that's not me just throwing Raz under the bus. I wonder about a whole bunch of them.
Jerry says, I'd ask every player if they're open to being traded.
Well, unless they have a, you know, no move clause, you don't have to ask them.
That's true.
And you probably don't tip your hand that you might call around about them in the summer either.
This says, in my sultry Pat voice, I'd ask Kadri if he still wants to be here or prefer moving to a contender. That's from Wedley, who knows all about the Pillow Talk Pat voice. Final one, Chantel from Beddington says, I have a question. What happens to Flames talk when the season is done? And
I've been wondering this too.
I know a lot of the players will be asking about that. They'll be asking I don't know. Kuzi, I don't know what's going to happen to Flames talk. I'm not sure. Wes probably has to take some holidays, and I don't know what Vince is going to do.
Do you take holidays?
Hell yeah, I do.
Okay.
Are you kidding me? I don't think I've
We'll be talking a little bit of Flames.
What do people work in July? Is that a thing? Flames talk ain't going anywhere. We're going strong up until the draft and free agency. So we'll be here through April, May, into June, up until the draft, up until free agency. So you're not getting rid of Flames talk. Might take a couple of hiatuses here and there, but not getting rid of Flames talk. We're hanging around for the foreseeable future, even though the games have gone away. I'll be perfectly honest with you, from just a straight up coming up with content standpoint, you've wanted to still respect that there are games to be played and talk about the storylines on the ice and those types of things. Now, and that's been a grind at times because the stakes just haven't been there for the last 2 months almost. It's felt like games have been stake-free.
Yeah.
And there isn't a whole lot riding on results. Well, now you can start – I feel a little bit less guilty about going big, big picture now starting next week on Flames Talk. It's Pat and Wes along with you. Thank you for all your texts. Sorry we couldn't get to all of them. Lots of good stuff. We'll do a mailbag next week, a full-on mailbag next week. Don't worry about that. We'll get to more of these questions as we move into the off-season mode. Wes Gilbertson, Pat Steinberg along with you from the Scotiabank Saddle Dome. Everything's coming at you and being produced out of our downtown studio, the Doug Lacey's Basement Systems downtown studio. Crack foundation, Boeing foundation walls, they have a simple permanent solution to stabilize your foundation. Contact Basement Systems, they're all things basement-y. Visit dlbasementsystems.com.
Flames Talk is live on Calgary's Hockey Station, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Time now for a Thursday edition, season finale edition of our Daily Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. Race into spring with a freshly clean car. Book one of the 32 service bays at MercedesBenzCountryHills.ca, and they'll revitalize your exterior paint finish. And everyone's here at the Dome on this Thursday. Pat, Wes, and now the voice of the Flames, Derek Wills, joins us to complete our Daily Flames Roundtable. Big picture on the Daily Flames Roundtable ahead of the final game of the regular season. We'll do it on both sides. 81 in the books, one more still to go. What's the most positive development that we've seen over the course of this season, guys?
Believe it or not, I actually think there are a bunch of different ways we could go with this. And after giving it some thought, I was tempted to go with Connor Zary or Martin Pospisil, but decided to go in a different direction. So the first trade that Craig Conroy made was sending Tyler Toffoli to the Devils for Yegor Sharangovich and a third-round pick. And at the time, I know a lot of people weren't so sure. You're trading your leading goal scorer and point producer from a year ago for a guy who was a healthy scratch in the playoffs and a lottery ticket and a third-round pick, but it has worked out so well for the Flames. So Tyler Toffoli has two more goals and six less points than Yegor Sharangovich, who is 6 years younger and making quite a bit less. You know, he signed a two-year, $6.2 million extension, so $3.1 million AAV. And I think it's safe to say he's earned that contract, guys. He broke Mikhail Grabowski's NHL record for most goals in a season by a Belarusian and most points in a season by a Belarusian. Leads the team with 31 goals, is second on the team with 59 points. He's versatile. He can play in all three forward positions and has moved up and down the lineup. He's got the second most penalty kill time for a forward on this team behind Michael Backlund. He's fifth in the team in power play minutes, so he plays in all situations. And he's a really good 200-foot player and a guy who we've seen thrive at both right wing and at center. He spent a little bit of time on left wing, but primarily played in those two positions. And I just think a great piece to move forward with.
Guys, the most positive development for me this season is the willingness from Craig Conroy and management to take a step backward, to embrace a retool or a rebuild or a re-whatever you want to call it, reset. I don't care what word you choose. I would have been pretty worried if this team went and extended a bunch of pieces and continued down a path that had not proven to be successful. And I think the first half of this season really reinforced that something had to change here. And you mentioned Yegor Sharangovich as an individual bright spot. And And also for me, as evidence that if you find the right pieces, these things don't need to be multi-year. It's going to be multi-years, but this doesn't mean...
doesn't need to be a decade
long. That, that's a good way to put it. And so I just think that the direction that this organization is headed is something that was necessary. And it's crazy that it was a year and a half ago that it felt like they might be a piece or two away from contending, but that didn't turn out to be the case. And this organization unfortunately took a pretty sharp left or pretty sharp right before they got to the contention road. And I don't think Craig Conroy really had much choice but to go younger, to try to get faster, to try to stack up on stock up on those future assets like draft capital. And while it might mean a bunch of losses next season, while it's meant, you know, we're watching a team play out the string as opposed to fight for a playoff spot, I do think that that direction ultimately is a positive development for this team.
That to me is honestly the biggest one for me too, guys. Like the rookies is really important. Kuzeri, Pospisil,
and that's kind of part of it too, right? They've shown you that, hey,
it kind of goes part and parcel, right?
Right.
Like I guess the way that I would go with it is, I just am really encouraged by the fact the Flames have been willing and committed to go younger. And it was something that Craig Conroy said in his introductory news conference almost a year ago. And it's something that, you know, he's lived by the whole practice what you preach thing. I remember sitting with him in Penticton and chatting with him on the air. And I asked him about going and bringing PTOs. And he said, yeah, no, not really up our alley. I said, we want to let young guys compete. And I said, I'm going to do something. I want to make sure that I do what I said. And they have been very committed to getting younger players opportunity. Matt Coronato made this team out of a training camp. Yeah, it didn't work out in the first month, and he was sent down. But then Zeri came in, and Pospisil came in. And every time somebody's come in, even if it hasn't worked out, the team's gone out of their way to get them into games. And you know, I know that there have been conversations about maybe this player should be higher up the lineup or this player should be getting more opportunity. But from a big picture standpoint, I think Craig Conroy has done a nice job in really executing that plan. And then on top of that, with the, like, I don't think any of the deals that have been made have been necessarily deals that are there to impact Craig's vision of the future. I think he was cleaning up some messes. You know, he had a bunch of guys all expiring at the same time. He had to figure those things out before he could even really start to put in place how he wants to build this team. But in all of those deals, the focus has been about getting younger as well. And he hasn't tried to go and make those hanging on desperate right now moves, right? Even the Toffoli deal got them significantly younger and got them, to your point, Wilsey, a player that is going to be here potentially for quite some time. And every other trade has, there have been players that have come back, but they've all been younger players that they see potentially fitting here in the long term, plus the picks, plus the prospects. So to me, for a team that it's been obvious for more than a year now that they've needed to go younger, and Craig Conroy looked at it and said, yeah, that's one of the things I'm going to try to do, and they have gone about that. That to me has been the biggest positive this season.
Yeah, the other one for me would be all of the draft picks that they've stockpiled, because during my 10 seasons calling Flames games, they've traded a lot of picks away to try to compete. And they've had a couple of runs to the second round, but that's it. I don't think why you're trading those draft picks away to get to the second round of the playoffs. You want to go to the conference finals or to the Stanley Cup final, and you want to eventually win a championship. But they've got 24 picks in the next three drafts, including five first-rounders. And this summer, 9 picks, including 2 first-rounders. And now it's on the scouts, and now it's on the managers to make the most of those draft picks. There can't be a lot of swings and misses if this team's going to turn things around by the time they move into the new arena.
Yep.
Can I just add one more?
Of course.
And, you know, we spent a big part of the first half of this hour, you know, talking about, okay, well, does this veteran want to be here, or does this veteran, you know, is he interested in being part of a retool? I think another positive development that I've seen this year, guys, is I think this group has the right sort of leadership for a retool. You know, I think about a guy like Blake Holman, the sort of professionalism and the consistency we've seen from him. I think about the way Nazem Kadri and Mackenzie Weegar have been playing their butts off in meaningless games. Like, I do think another positive development is a tough season has sort of exposed the fact that I don't think they have a bunch of veterans that are going to mail it in on this group, and that's a positive for me, too.
Yep. On the other side, it's our Daily Flames Roundtable. It's Wes Gilbertson, Derek Wills, Pat Steinberg on this Thursday edition of Flames Talk. Guys, what's the most disappointing development that we've seen this season? What has been the thing that has evolved or has become clear throughout this 81 of 82 games that's been most disappointing?
For me, it was the fact that they were out of the playoff race as quickly as they were. And if I'm not mistaken, they were mathematically eliminated on April 6th. But realistically, it had been quite some time. And I think we all knew it was coming. When they decided to trade Nikita Zadorov and then kind of had to trade Elias Lindholm, Chris Tanev, and Noah Hanifin, I had a tough time envisioning them being better without those guys than they were with those guys, and they weren't good enough with those guys to be in a playoff spot. So the fact that they were out earlier this season than in my first nine seasons calling Flames games, and some of those teams had lower expectations than this team did going into the season. So, you know, I look back at the 2-7-1 start, and I know we're getting ready for game 82 of 82, and you know, 10 games down, they still had 72 games to go. Guys, I'm not sure they ever overcame that 2-7-1 start to the season and picking up five of a possible 20 points to get the season going. I think it might have kind of laid the groundwork for some of the trades that they did end up having to make, because some of those players were probably on the fence about what they wanted to do. And if the Flames had got off to a good start and look like a team that could compete for a playoff spot and maybe win a round or two, I do wonder if some of those guys potentially decide to re-sign a long-term deal with the team. It didn't go that way. They were chasing the whole season. So for me, just the fact that they were out of it realistically and then eventually mathematically as quickly as they were, disappointing, because, you know, especially prior to the trades, I did look at this as a team that should at least fight for a playoff spot, and they didn't do it long enough.
I'm going to go individual, and I think yours is certainly a great point, Wilsey. The most disappointing development this season, and I hate to pick on one guy, but the most disappointing development for me is the sort of realization of what you can realistically expect from Jonathan Huberdeau over the course of what is now the biggest contract
Wes and I have not compared notes, but we're on exact same wavelength.
Like this,
I didn't want to pick on one guy.
Yeah, and
I went a different direction.
I don't really want to either, because I certainly appreciate Jonathan's accountability. I know how hard he's working to make it turn, but I think now through two seasons with the Flames, we can officially, and many have already, reset what realistic expectations are for Jonathan Huberdeau. And if you even look at the second half of the season, like I was just quickly doing the math, you go back to New Year's Eve, which is what many have looked at as sort of a bit of a turning point for Jonathan Huberdeau. He gets out of that point slump and starts to produce more regularly, starts in my conversations with him to feel better about his own game. Even since then, guys, if you project that pace and over a full season, it's like a 68-point pace. And that's what I think we're talking about. You know, Jonathan Huberdeau going into the finale tonight has 12 goals, 40 assists, and a minus 29 rating. And we're talking about a guy who, even when he is playing better hockey, is playing at a 65 or 70-point pace. And I think as you sort of game plan as the Flames going into next season, you can't realistically project it's going to be much better than that, because I'm taking that 65 or 70 number from a stretch that Jonathan's felt better about the way he's been playing. And again, the accountability's there, the work ethic's there. This guy's really popular in the locker room. I can say a ton of good things about Jonathan Huberdeau, but with 7 years and $10.5 million a winter over that span remaining on his deal, I just don't think we're talking now about a player that you can expect to be much over 70 points. And certainly if that's the case, that plus minus has to get a whole lot better.
Yeah, it's, you know, the fact that him getting to 70 points next year would be a massive step forward,
yeah,
is something that you're like, geez, that it just, the fact that it has gone as disastrously as it's gone since him getting here, and the fact that it didn't take the step that we all hoped it would this year would be the most disappointing development if it's me, because he is the highest paid player on the team by a significant margin. And because of that, so much rides on him in terms like your highest paid guys on your cap have got to be your biggest contributors in this day and age, unless you've got guys like, you know, Jason Robertson and Roope Hintz who are pulling the wagon and getting the job done in Dallas, for instance, and mitigating what's happening with, you know, the diminishing returns for Sagan and Ben, right? And that hasn't happened the same way here. They don't have that same type of youth yet or to this point that is able to do that. So that would be the biggest disappointment for me. And I really hope that it takes another step or takes a more positive step, or to Wes's point, Wilsey, that what we've seen in the second half of this season is better than what we saw in the second half of the season is what we're going to see to start next season. That maybe, and that would put him on a 65, 70 point pace, maybe that's the player he can be to start next year and can still be taking some steps and continuing to grow. That, so I guess it's a disappointing development, and you just hope that there are still some steps or some progression to take here when it comes to Huberdeau. But it is a really worrying trend now, 2 years into his time with the Flames, no doubt.
Yeah, it sure is. And there have been a handful of players who have had really disappointing seasons. But on the flip side of that, there have been a handful of players that have had really good seasons, mm-hmm, for a team that hasn't met expectations, or certainly didn't prior to the trade deadline. And here's maybe a homework assignment for you, Wes, because I know you love digging up these obscure facts. I wonder when the last time a non-playoff team had 330 goal scorers and 120 goal scorer on defense, because the Flames have an opportunity,
yeah,
if Nazem Kadri and Blake Coleman, who is playing tonight, can score one goal and both get to 30, and if Mackenzie Weegar can score one goal and get to 20, the Flames could have 330 goal scorers at forward and 120 goal scorer on defense. I would say that's really rare for a non-playoff team, and fairly rare for any team in this league.
And I don't want to be the glass half empty guy, but, you know, I've had this conversation with a couple buddies, and, you know, the one thing that occurs to me is that those milestones that we're talking about, while great for the individual players and fun to track over the remainder of the season, you know, I sort of wonder, man, okay, if this guy had a career high and this guy had a career high, you don't have a whole lot of veterans that have had disappointing seasons. So if this guy exceeds expectations and this guy did and this guy did,
yeah,
what are we talking about next year? Like, can these guys maintain that, or are we talking about some really tough nights because you've got some guys coming back down from career best? That concerns me.
Yeah, and fair. I do hope that Huberdeau is able to take some steps forward next year, and that if that happens, could mitigate a Coleman's probably not going to be a 30 goal guy next year. Maybe he is, but probably not. I don't know what Sharon Govich is long term. I don't know if this is a guy that goes from being a 30 goal guy to a 25 goal guy, or a 30 goal guy to flirting with 40. I don't know on the Sharon Govich front, but that is an interesting thing to watch going into next year, because there have been so many strong seasons for the veterans on this team.
Yeah, and since it's the last roundtable of the season, hopefully you'll allow glass half full guy over here to have the last word.
Fill it up, buddy. Fill it up.
So I think if you're a fan that's hoping the team will be competitive, not for a Stanley Cup, but pushing for a playoff spot, if you're hoping the Flames will be next season's version of this season's Predators, I'm not sure a lot of people thought they would be heading to the Stanley Cup playoffs with some of the changes they made. I think what you have to hope is that you have some more young players who step up and play a bigger role than most thought that they would. No one saw Martin Pospisil coming. No one. I'm not sure a lot of people thought Connor Zeri was going to be top 10 in the NHL in rookie goals, points, and plus minus. He's had a really good season. So you hope the young guys who have contributed, those two guys would be at the top of the list for me, Dustin Wolf, that those players can take another step next season. And then you hope you have another Connor Zeri, another Martin Pospisil that is ready to make that move, whether it be from college or junior or the AHL to the NHL, and help this team out. And then you hope that Craig Conroy is able to fill some of the holes that were left when he traded Nikita Zadorov, Elias Lindholm, Chris Tanev, and Noah Hanifin away. And he can do that through trades. He can do that through free agency. And we'll have to wait and see what kind of draft pick they get. So I'm excited to see what happens in the offseason. I will say this, though. Things feel a lot different around here at this time this year compared to this time last year. Remember that black cloud that was kind of hanging over this building?
Sure. Yeah.
Things feel a lot different, don't you think?
Yeah, and I'll just add to your point. You know, we've seen in Yegor Sharangovich especially, I think in finding a guy with some fascinating potential in Daniil Miramanov, you know, the Flames pro scouting staff, I think, has done some really good work this season. And so maybe they
even
can
help. Even the waiver wire guys.
Yeah, maybe they can help plug some holes too, right? Whether that's a guy that you get in free agency, in a trade, whatever. But, you know, they've taken some good cuts this year.
That is our Daily Flames Roundtable. Derek Wills, Wes Gilbertson, Pat Steinberg, as we start to wrap up this hour of Flames Talk and the Daily Flames Roundtable, brought to you, as always, by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. Race into spring with a freshly cleaned car. Book one of the 32 service bays at MercedesBenzCountryHills.ca, and they'll revitalize your exterior paint finish.